Shalom. Welcome to SJTF. This is Chaim Ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to elevating the souls of Simcha Chazdai, Pesach Ben Dov, Meir Ben Yecheskel, and Yosef Ben Meir. Before we get to our many questions from our great JTFers this week, I want to speak about our latest video. We actually did two versions of this video, one in Hebrew, one in English. And the video was about a prominent Christian evangelical spokesman who is repeating our lines, the lines that we in JTF have been using for many years, word for word, on the issue of there not being a Palestinian people. And we're happy that he's doing this. We're not complaining about it. We're happy that he's repeating our lines, because our lines are effective lines. They're very convincing and they're truthful, and we want people to repeat our lines. But there's an important lesson here to be learned for JTFers and for everyone. First, let's go over some of the things that he says, which are word for word what we have been saying for 40 years now. We're the only ones that have been basically saying this for 40 years. He mentions that the Roman Emperor Hadrian created the term Palestine and Palestinian, something which we always mention. He says that the term naming the land of Israel Palestine was to name it after the ancient Philistines, the hated enemies of the Jewish people in ancient times. Again, something that we always bring up. He mentions that there was a Jewish majority in Jerusalem by the 1880s, another fact that we bring up frequently. He mentions the fact that this term, Palestinian, was one that nobody used. No one claimed that there was a Palestinian people or that there was a Palestine until the 1960s. This first started in the 1960s. Before the 1960s, the Arabs themselves always denied that there's such a thing as a Palestinian people. This is something we always bring up, and he brought it up, mentioning the 1960s, mentioning everything that we mention word for word. And then he used the line that I have used so many times for decades now. He says, can you name one Palestinian emperor or one Palestinian prime minister? And he goes through a whole list of to make the point that there was never any prominent Palestinians because there was never a Palestinian people. And this is his whole presentation, point after point, word for word, comes right out of what we've been saying for the past 40 years. And again, we compliment him for it. We're happy that he's using this material. It's good for the Jewish people, and it's good for the world to hear these facts. So we're happy that he's using this material, which is reaching millions of his evangelical Christian viewers on his very popular Christian television program. But the point to be made here is, look at how effective our message is. Look at how normal, sane people, when they see our message, want to use our message and understand the truthfulness of it and the effectiveness of it. And by the way, it's not just this prominent Christian evangelical leader. The same thing happened with Mike Huckabee and Newt Gingrich when they were running for president. How does Mike Huckabee and Newt Gingrich, how do they get the talking points, if we can use that term, of JTF? I mean, how does Mike Huckabee wind up using the same lines that Chaim Ben Pesach uses about there not being a Palestinian people, or Newt Gingrich? How does that happen? You might wonder, what, you mean Mike Huckabee and Newt Gingrich listen to SJTF? No, they don't listen to SJTF, but they do see the English language videos that I do on YouTube. How do they see it? Because we put in the tag words, on our tag words, we put in Mike Huckabee, Newt Gingrich. If people are running for president, we'll put those tag words in there. So what happens is when Mike Huckabee searches, when he goes to YouTube, the first thing he types in to search, he'll type in his name, Mike Huckabee, because he'll want to see what new things are people saying about me, especially when he was running for president or even last year when he was considering running for president. So he'll type in the search engine, the YouTube search engine, Mike Huckabee, when he goes to YouTube. And when he does that, he's going to come up with our videos, because we did a lot of videos supporting Mike Huckabee. We also did a lot of videos in regard to Newt Gingrich. So they come up with our English language videos, and they see our English language videos because their names are part of the tag words that we use on the videos. So their names pop up when they when they type their names into the YouTube search engine, which is something all politicians do. When a politician goes to YouTube, the first thing he does is type his own name in to see the latest thing that his friends and foes are saying about him on YouTube. If he's going to YouTube, he wants to see what they're saying. And so Mike Huckabee, Newt Gingrich, this evangelical Christian minister and others, they see our videos, they see our message, and they realize that what we're saying is truthful. They may even do some research to see if historically what we're saying is correct, and every fact that we have is in fact 100% accurate. And so they see that the message is true. They see that it's a very effective and powerful message, and so they adopt it because they're normal, because they're sane. And why do I say because they're normal and they're sane? Because Jews in our generation are not normal and are not sane. I'm sorry, but after 2,000 years of being homeless and stateless and defenseless and hated and persecuted in country after country, after 2,000 years of inquisitions and crusades and pogroms and holocausts and expulsions and tortures of the worst type, the Jews are not normal anymore. I mean, it made them a nutty people. It's unfortunate, it's sad even, but they're a nutty people, the Jews. And so the Jews do not respond like a normal people when they see this type of message as much as Gentiles who support Israel would respond. Evangelical Christians who want to support Israel, they respond because they're normal, because they're sane. Any sane, normal person knows that our message is the most effective message if you want to support Israel. Any sane, normal person can see that. However, I will say one thing. In Israel, where there's a certain percentage of Jews in the population in Israel who are normal. And so in Israel, our message also is repeated by people who see our Hebrew videos. I can't tell you how many times I have seen rabbis quoting our videos, politicians using terms that we use in our videos, expressions and terms and even slang that I use. I mean, literally right out of what I'm saying over and over again. And I'm the only one that you know for sure that it's coming from us when they'll use expressions that only we use, things that only we say, and in the same order in which we say it. And I've seen so many times, I've seen rabbis and politicians in Israel and settlement leaders quote us. I've seen this happen over and over again because our message is the only sane, normal, intelligent, effective message. If there is no Palestinian people and there is no Palestine, and the fact is there really isn't, then you can't create a Palestine state, and it's all a falsehood. And the Arabs living in Israel have no national rights to take over Israel. And they're there, basically, they're the invaders, and they're the foreign forces there that are occupying land, not the Jews. And so our message is the message for Jewish survival, and the message that is effective. It's uncompromising, our message. Our message is principled, and it's logical. It's based on historical facts. That is a winning message. And so this evangelical Christian spokesman saw that this is a winning message, and so he wants to use it, the winning message, and we're glad that he did. Mike Huckabee and Newt Gingrich saw the same thing when they said there's no Palestinian people and used a lot of the same statistics, expressions, and terms that we use. And the same thing is true in Israel. When people quote us in Israel, which happens all the time, when they quote from our Hebrew videos, we're having an impact, we're having an influence on them. And that is important. And you know what the real moral of the story is? The real moral of the story is, if this is what we do with such a pathetic budget, and when we're just an organization whose leader is exiled from Israel by force, has been forcibly expelled from Israel for many years, and is forced to live outside the land, and is forced to communicate with Jews in Israel through the internet, through Hebrew videos on the internet with a Hebrew forum. If this is our situation now, imagine what type of influence we would have if we had our people in the Knesset and if we become a mass movement, imagine what type of influence we could have. I'm telling you, you make us a mass movement, or you put one of our people in the Knesset, we will change Jewish history. We will change Jewish history just as surely as Morenu Verabenu, our leader and our rabbi, Meir Kahana Zecher Tzadik VeKadosh Livracha Hashem Yikom Damo. Just as Harab Meir Kahana changed Jewish history when he was in the Knesset for 4 years, so will we. He moved the entire country to the right because his arguments were so logical and so truthful and so effective and so powerful and so persuasive that even people who hated him without even realizing it were being influenced by what he was saying. The same thing is true with JTF's message. And so our dream is to get into the Knesset. Our dream is to become a mass movement. Our dream is to reach as many people as possible, because our message is the message that can save Israel. And you know something? Our message is also the message that can save America, because our right-wing positions on issues involving America and involving the Western world are also logical, sane, intelligent, and very persuasive positions. The things that we say about illegal immigration, about the illegal aliens, about the destruction of American moral values and society and cultural decadence, the things that we're saying are true for Israel, for America, for the world. And that's why it's so important that we succeed, and that's why it's so important that we grow and become a mass movement. If only we could get a member of the Knesset elected. If only we could do that. I don't know if we're going to be able to do it. The next election will probably be in several years. And we're doing everything we can. I hope somehow we can do something to get in by then. If we can't, then we'll just have to wait for the election after that, which would be unfortunate. But meanwhile, we're doing everything we can to reach as many people as we can and influence as many people as we can as quickly as we can. And so we need your help. Every one of us can play a role. You can try, at least. At least you can do everything you can to make a difference so that we can, hopefully, reach people and succeed. We've got to do everything we can. We're not allowed to be silent. We're not allowed to allow the truth to be suppressed. We've got to spread the truth and wake people up. We're obligated to do that. That's why we're in this world. That's why God put us in this world. And so, help us. Please help us. When you see our Hebrew and English videos, when you see me uploading our Hebrew and English videos on the forum, help us with those videos. Comment, favorite, like, mirror. Do everything that you can do to promote those videos. I might have forgotten a couple of the other things you can do. Everything you can do to promote those videos on YouTube and on Facebook. Very, very important. Help us with that. And help us on our English and Hebrew forums. Help us to have inviting English and Hebrew forums so that people will want to be active with us and will want to get involved, so our Hebrew and English forums will grow and our movement will grow. And help us on our Facebook pages. We have at least 4 Facebook pages. We have 2 English Facebook pages. We have a Hebrew Facebook page. And we have my personal home Facebook page. We have at least 4 Facebook pages. Help us with our Facebook pages so our Facebook pages will appeal to people and will attract people. And most of all, of course, we need your financial support. If we had the funds that are necessary, we could reach everybody in Israel. We could make such a difference. We could change history and change history in such a positive way. And so I want to thank the wonderful JTFers who go on a regular basis to our main English homepage, which is jtf.org, or the Hebrew homepage, which is hayamin.org. On jtf.org and on hayamin.org, there is a donate button on top. You can click on the donate button, and in a couple of minutes, very conveniently, very securely, you can make a credit card donation to our organization. I thank the wonderful JTFers who have been generously doing that. God bless you. God bless your families, both in this world and in the next. And God bless the great JTFers. God bless them and their families in this world and the next, who help us by sending us checks and money orders and cash donations through the regular mail to our post office box. God bless you. Together, with your financial help, and with your helping us on the forums and helping us with our videos, God willing, we'll reach enough people. God willing, we'll grow fast enough. God willing, we'll put something together that somehow, with God's help, will enable us to eventually make the big times and eventually, I hope, achieve our dream of getting into the Knesset so that we could finally reach all the people of Israel the way Rabbi Kahana was able to do during the time he was in the Knesset, and he changed Jewish history when he did that. We also want to change Jewish history, and this time we want to finish the job that Rabbi Kahana started. Be'ezrat Hashem, God willing. And so, just wanted to mention to you how exciting I think it is every time we see this, every time we see that our message is a message that is effective, it's a message that's truthful, and it's a message that gives hope to the Jews in Israel and gives hope as well to people in the United States and Western countries and who are under siege as well from the forces of evil in this world during this generation, during this time in which the forces of evil are very strong in the world, unfortunately. But let's not despair, because we know from the Bible and we know from God's promise, in the end, the good guys are going to win. There may be a lot of suffering, God forbid, before then. There may be a lot of tragedy before then. But in the end, the good guys will win. That's for sure. And now, let's get to our great questions from our great JTFers. And we start out with Eli Yitzchaki, who is active on both the English and the Hebrew forums. Eli Yitzchaki writes, and I quote, "Hello, Chaim, what do you think about Moshe Feiglin's plan to offer $500,000 to any Arab family willing to leave Israel?" Unquote. Here's another example, Eli Yitzchaki, of what I've been speaking about in my opening. This is our plan, the Kahanist plan, to offer compensation to Arabs to leave Israel, to offer them compensation to permanently leave Israel. This has been our plan for 40 years now. Now, the one difference is Moshe Feiglin has put a figure on it. He says he wants to give $500,000 to an Arab family. I don't know exactly what he's calculating as an Arab family. If he's saying an Arab family is just mother, father, and children, just the immediate family, that would be very expensive. That would really be very expensive, and I don't know how he thinks we could afford that. But if he's saying an Arab family is an extended family, aunts, uncles, cousins, the whole family gets $500,000, that's a different story. Then it's more reasonable. I would have to ask him specifically what he means by this, because this is an expensive, this would be pretty expensive. So I would have to ask him exactly how much he figures is covered by this. I also have another question about it, that I have another problem, a little bit of a problem with it. If you have an Arab family with just three or four family members, they're going to get $500,000 under his plan. And if you have another Arab family with 30 members of the family, they also get $500,000. I don't think that would work out. I don't think that people would accept that. I don't think the Arabs would accept that. And I don't think that people would accept that. So I think that there has to be a little flexibility in terms of, I don't think you can put a flat figure on how much you're going to give to any family, no matter how big the family is, no matter what the circumstances. I think you have to have some flexibility. But overall, his proposal is a move in the right direction overall. It's a positive proposal overall, even if on some of the details I might have questions. I do have questions about some of the details, but overall it's a positive position. Thank you very much, Eli. And now we go to the great Ruby Stars, who writes, and I quote, "On non-political forums, science, health, cooking, etc., most are leftists. Why is the internet so full of leftists and not half conservative?" Unquote. Fantastic question, as always, Ruby Stars. Number one, because the internet is dominated by young people, and the younger generation is left-wing right now. There are a number of reasons why the younger generation is left-wing. One reason is because of demographics. The majority of babies being born in the United States today are non-white. And so the left obviously has a demographic advantage there. In addition to that, there's been a massive brainwashing campaign that has taken place for many years among young people in this country. And the internet, like the big corporations, like the news media, is controlled and owned by left-wing people. I mean, just look at the people on there. Look at Microsoft, Facebook, Google, what else? YouTube. They're all owned by the left. They're all controlled, lock, stock, and barrel by the left because the billionaires, the really wealthy, powerful people are left-wing. And so they control the internet, basically. And so even the non-political forums are dominated by the left. That's just a fact of life. So you have demographics. You have the fact that the younger demographic tends to be more left-wing because it's more non-white. And you have the fact that the left controls the news media and controls the big websites and controls the big corporations in this country. All of that in combination creates a situation where those of us on the right are in the minority and have a very hard time on many websites. I hope that answers your question, Ruby Stars, but you know, Ruby Stars, we have to create alternatives. We have to create alternatives so that we're not in this situation. That's the only answer. We have to have an alternative media. We have to have alternative internet sites. We have to have alternatives for right-wing people. Anyway, thank you, Ruby Stars. And now we go to our good friend Pyramid Head Fan, who writes, and I quote, "Dear Chaim, what is God's purpose for creating volcanoes, earthquakes, and other disasters?" Unquote. Well, when God punishes or when God destroys, it's some of it can be punishment, some of it can be for the sake of justice, and sometimes it's to correct people's behavior. You know, when man has his stomach full and is very happy and feels very content, it often leads to decadent behavior and evil behavior and arrogant behavior. Sometimes disasters bring man back down to earth and make men and women, when I say men, I'm referring to men and women, human beings, make human beings realize that they're mortal and that God controls the world and controls nature and that they have to watch their behavior because there are consequences for bad behavior. So the purpose of these disasters can be corrective. It can be to correct bad behavior and to wake people up. And it can also be for punishment purposes. And it could also be for the sake of justice and punishment against evil people. So God has his reasons when he does what he does. And in this world, we do have many disasters. In the next world, we're not going to be, in the next world, the world to come, these types of things will not be happening. Anyway, thank you very much. Or people won't be harmed by them, even if they do happen. Anyway, thank you, Pyramid Head Fan. And now we go to the great waiting for the mother plane to come, who writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim, what are you doing for Middle Eastern History Month?" All right, let's start with that. Well, I would like to, if remember Yosef Ben Meir, when he was alive, we used to burn PLO flags and used to burn the flags of Muslim terrorist countries. I think that's a good way to celebrate Middle Eastern History Month. What's the history? What exactly is their history? Murdering, raping, destroying, being terrorists, calling for the death of anyone who doesn't have the Islamic religion. What type of history are we speaking about here? And now waiting for the mother plane writes, and I quote, "Please say who the real father of Suha Arafag's child is. Thanks." Unquote. I don't know who the real father is of Suha Arafat's child. Obviously, Arafat himself was a notorious homosexual who died of AIDS, and he never had relations with Suha. Michael Jackson's children are not his children. I mean, come on. Did you see Michael Jackson's children? I mean, they are so obviously 100% white. If you saw what Michael Jackson used to look like before he had a million plastic surgeries and did everything else to change his skin color and all the other crazy things he did, the idea that his kids would look so completely 100% white is absurd. So Yasser Arafat's so-called child is not his child, and Michael Jackson's children are not his children. So that's the crazy world we live in. What can I tell you? Anyway, thank you, waiting for the mother plane. And now we go to our friend Leftists Destroy the West, who writes, and I quote, "You have explained why National Socialism was leftist, not right-wing. But what about Italian fascism, the Croat Ustasha? Were they also left-wing?" Unquote. They are left-wing because fascists believe in government control. They don't believe in private property. They believe in government control, in big government, and big government dictating to the people. They don't believe in the will of the people. Big government and control by government of private property, of people's rights, that is left wing. That's socialist. Even if someone doesn't call themselves a socialist, if they believe the government has a right to take over everything and to dictate to the people every single thing that they do in life, and that the people don't have any rights, the state has all the rights. The state has to be worshipped. The state is what we live for. Anyone who advocates that type of philosophy, whether it's fascist or communist or Nazi, that is socialism. That is left wing. Anyway, even though they call themselves right wing, they're not. Anyway, thank you, Leftists Destroy the West. And now we go to the great Da Vinci, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim. Have you noticed that Barack Hussein Obama supports abortion only for a Christian country like the U.S., but never for Islamic countries, unquote? Very, very true. Very, very true. Excellent point. And all of these groups, like Planned Parenthood and all these left-wing groups, that's what they always do. You know, in Israel, you have all of these feminist groups telling Jewish women to have abortions, and then saying we have to have healthier, encourage the Arabs to have more babies and have healthier Arab babies. In other words, they're pushing the Arab Muslim births. They want more and more Arab Muslim births, but they want Jewish women to have abortions. So, you know, this is it's so obvious, you know, what's going on here. I mean, and those are self-hating Jews that do, the self-hating Jewish feminists in Israel do that. But Barack Hussein Obama, he does that because he's a Muslim. Of course, he's a Muslim. He doesn't want his people, by the way, to have abortions. He wants white Christian women to have abortions. He doesn't want them to have children. There's no question whom, I mean, at the same time, he wants to encourage women, he wants to encourage his people, blacks, black women, to have babies. That's why he insists upon generous government programs that support women having illegitimate children. Because he knows that that's what his people, most of the black babies born are illegitimate. So he knows that. So he wants to encourage that as much as possible. Anyway, thank you, Da Vinci. Great point. And now we go to our great friend EB22, who writes, and I quote, please discuss the corruption scandal situation involving State Senator Malcolm Smith, Councilman Dan Halloran, and Queens Republican Vice Chair Vincent Tabon, unquote. Okay, I'm very glad you brought this up, EB. You know, okay, Malcolm Smith is a black state senator. He's a crook. He was always a crook. He was always under investigation, so it's not surprising that he was trying to bribe Republican leaders. He's a Democrat, but he wanted to run for mayor of New York as a Republican, so he was trying to bribe them to let him on the ballot in the Republican primary. That's not surprising. And, you know, the fact that there are sleazy Republicans that are willing to play along, like Vincent Tabon of the Queens Republican Party, and I forgot the name of the head of the Bronx Republican Party, another corrupt individual. No, that doesn't surprise me either. And I'm not surprised about Dan Halloran, but I want to mention something about Councilman Dan Halloran, because he came up on our forum, and some people were upset with me when I opposed him when he was running for Congress. He ran for Congress as the Republican and Libertarian candidate for Congress. He's a supporter, by the way, of Ron Paul and of Rand Paul. And he's a Libertarian and he's a pagan. He believes in the German pagan gods that that the Nazis believed in. And then he had the nerve to, and he literally says that. He was raised a Catholic, but he left Catholicism and now he calls himself a pagan. And believes in the same German pagan theology that Hitler and the Nazis believed in. And then he goes, because he was running in a congressional district with many Jewish voters, especially many Orthodox Jewish voters, he went to the Jews and he claimed he's a strong supporter of Israel. Yeah, sure. He backs Ron Paul for president and supports Rand Paul and is a pagan. And he calls him and he claims he's a supporter of Israel. Are you kidding me? So I was against him. Even though he was the Republican candidate, I was against him, and I said that on the forum that I was against him. And that, you know, some people were a couple of people were upset about that because they want to support anyone who's a Republican, no matter what. which I don't do, by the way. I do not support people just because of party. It happens to be that in the vast majority of cases, the Republicans are the lesser of the evils, so we do support the Republicans in the vast majority of cases. But if there's a Republican who's really bad and who's worse than the Democrat, we're not going to support the Republican. So I just want to, for the record, I just want to mention, I told you so about Dan Halloran. I told you he was bad news, and now he's been indicted for corruption, trying to get a black left-wing Democrat elected mayor of New York in exchange for bribery, and he was taking bribes. I mean, just as sleazy as they come. Just as low and as evil and as corrupt as they come. And I told you so. I had to bring that up for the record because a couple of people did not like the fact that I was against his candidacy when he ran for Congress. Anyway, thank you, EB22. And I'm just going to check something very quickly here. Okay, that's looking good. And now we go to the great Dr. Dan, the voice of reason, common sense, and logic, who writes, and I quote, "What should happen to North Korea, and what do you think the U.S. will do?" Unquote. Well, obviously, North Korea's evil regime should be overthrown, and the people of North Korea should be freed. Korea should be reunited. Look at the difference between South Korea and North Korea. South Korea is a democratic country with a vibrant economy, and North Korea is a country where probably 2 million people in the past couple of decades, probably about 2 million of their citizens have starved to death. This guy starves his people to death. This lunatic regime in North Korea, this lunatic communist dictatorship in North Korea, they starve their people to death. And now he has nuclear bombs, and he's sharing the information, of course, with Iran, and he helped Pakistan build their nuclear arsenal. Very, very dangerous. Very, very dangerous. That is a regime that should be overthrown. That's a place where we want regime change. Not Saddam Hussein in Iraq so that we replace one Muslim dictator with another Muslim dictator. That was crazy. But North Korea, that's a place where you need regime change. That's a place where if the communists were overthrown and Korea was reunited, then you would have a much safer world and a much better world. But the problem in North Korea is actually Russia and China. They have been backing North Korea. They're standing in back of North Korea. No matter what they claim, they're liars. They're the ones that enable North Korea to continue to survive and continue to do what the terrible damage that they're doing. And they are spreading their nuclear plague all over the world, spreading nuclear weapons all over the world. I mean, they are very, very dangerous. The priority of the United States should be to put maximum pressure on China and Russia to cut off all ties and to overthrow the North Korean government and liberate the Korean people and reunite the Korean people so that we'll have an end to this terrible nuclear threat. That's what the goal should be. Will the United States do that under Barack Hussein Obama? I don't think so. Anyway, thank you, Dr. Dan. And now we go to our friend Chicago Jew, who writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim, do you believe if Martin Luther King was alive today, do you believe he would be as insignificant as Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton?" Unquote. No, I think Martin Luther King was smarter than Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton. He was much more clever than Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton. Just like Barack Hussein Obama is more clever than Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton. So I think Martin Luther King, if he were alive today, would be a very negative influence on the world. I think he would be doing harm, because he convinced a lot of whites and a lot of Jews, a lot of self-hating Jews, a lot of self-hating whites, to support his agenda, his left-wing agenda. So I think he was actually more dangerous than Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton. He's like Obama. You know, he knows how to speak to white people and knows how to speak to Jews. He understands how to fool them. So, I mean, or he understood how to fool them when he was alive. So he was actually more dangerous. Anyway, thank you, Chicago Jew. And now we go to the great Binyamin Yisrael, who writes, and I quote, "Can you share an affirmative action story involving blacks on a subway?" Unquote. Well, you know, Binyamin, we stopped with the affirmative action stories because we came to a point where I was getting five different people every week were asking me for different affirmative action stories. And the whole show was becoming one big show about affirmative action. And I think it was, you know, we agreed that it was hurting the show. So generally speaking, we don't want to go down that road again, I will say one thing. When I was a little boy, 50 years ago, I'm 56 now. 50 years ago, when I was a little boy, I remember traveling on the subway with my parents. And I remember how different the subway was. 50 years ago, the subway was cleaner, faster, safer. The subway fare at that time, I think, if I remember correctly, I think the subway fare was 20 cents or 20, I think it was 20 cents, maybe 15 cents, 15, 20 cents, something like that when I was a little boy. Now it's $2.50 and the subway is filthy, it smells, it's dangerous, people are thrown off the tracks by mostly black lunatics throwing people off the tracks. It's certainly not what it used to be. Now, when I was a little boy, New York City was overwhelmingly white. New York City was still overwhelmingly white. Now New York City is overwhelmingly non-white. And yes, I do believe there's a connection. I think that there is a cultural problem here. I think there's a cultural problem, and I think what we see is the type of cultural problem that really endangers the very survival of America, because all of America is going down the road that New York City already has gone down. And once that happens, once the white Europeans become a minority in the United States, that's the end of the United States as we know it. And I'm not, you know, I don't believe in, I'm not a racist, and I really am not a racist, and I don't believe in genetic racial theories. But I do believe that there is a cultural problem here with third world cultures. And I think if they become the dominant force in the United States, that's the end of the United States. And I know it's politically incorrect to say that, but I believe that that is the truth. Anyway, thank you, Binyamin. And now we go to the great Sayno to Islam, who writes, and I quote, David Duke said, Moscow has the world's largest number of white people. It's a lie. Moscow is filled with third world and is no whiter than Belgrade or Prague, unquote. Well, I agree with you. I don't think that Moscow has the world's largest number of white people. I think about a tenth of the people in Moscow are probably illegal aliens, non-white illegal aliens from third world countries or from regions of the former Soviet Union where you had third world behavior. That's probably about a tenth of the population in Moscow. And I'm just talking about the illegal aliens, only the illegal people. And even among the legals, you have, you know, a substantial percentage that is non-white and that is third world. If we're going to talk about white people in Russia, you know, and extol white people, there's a big cultural problem in Russia. The majority of Russian men have a serious drinking problem. That's a fact. Most Russian males drink far too much. Most Russian males drink several bottles of vodka every week. That's not an exaggeration. I know that sound, people are saying, wow, Chaim, what are you talking about? Believe me, if you look it up and research it, that's true. Most Russian males drink several bottles of vodka every week. That's very dangerous and very unhealthy. And therefore, the life expectancy of Russian males is much lower than in other Western countries. So, if we're talking about, I mean, this is an example of the fact that race does not necessarily mean that someone has cultural superiority over other people. Not necessarily. You have white people that also, you have cultures in which white people also descend into a very, very low type of lifestyle. And Russia is an example of that. Anyway, thank you. So say no to Islam. And now we go to the great spiraling leopard, the great Robert, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, can you tell a bit more about the 70 nations into which Judaism divides the world? Thank you, Robert, unquote. Yes, Judaism believes that there are essentially 70 nations, and it's referring to the Gentile nations of the world, the non-Jewish nations of the world. And, you know, it's not an exact science that there are exactly 70 nations, and this is the border, and this is the characteristic of one, because obviously there's a lot of intermarriage and a lot of mixing that takes place. But symbolically, we say that there are 70 nations of the world. and they represent the non-Jewish nations of the world. And during the time of Sukkot, the holiday of Sukkot, when we have the Holy Temple, we actually make a sacrifice. We make an animal sacrifice for the 70 nations. We sacrifice 70 animals so that God will bless the 70 nations, the righteous among the 70 nations. Because we in Judaism always pray for the righteous among the nations. And there are righteous people in every nation. Some nations have much more, some have much less. The United States, I think, has a much higher percentage of righteous people, probably because of the evangelical Bible believers. There is a higher percentage of righteous people in the United States. You have countries like the Muslim countries. I think there's a very, very low number of righteous people there, very few. But some righteous people exist in every country and in every society. You'll always have some who don't agree with and don't like the evil things that are going on and who object to them and who really want things to be different. You'll always have some. And so those are the people, of course, that Judaism regards as the righteous among the nations. Anyway, I hope that answers the question to a certain degree, a spiraling leopard. Or Robert. And again, we expect representatives of those 70 nations will be making sacrifices when the temple is rebuilt. And in the world to come, we believe that the 70 nations, that the righteous Gentiles from all 70 nations will also have eternal life, will also share in the reward of eternal life in the next world. And they're going to come three times a year, and they're going to make sacrifices as well at the Holy Temple. And they're going to be running the rest of the world. The Jews are going to run the land of Israel. And these 70 nations are going to run the rest of the world. They're going to be in charge of the rest of the world. That's what we believe. Anyway, thank you, Robert. And now we go to our good friend Super Zionist, who writes, and I quote, comments on Tim Wise, author on white privilege, calls for all whites to be exterminated. Is anti-white racism similar to anti-Semitism, unquote? In some respects, yes. In some respects, anti-white racism is similar because it's based upon jealousy. If you look at the black Hebrews and you look at, you know, the black Muslims and Farrakhan and these other beasts that are always preaching anti-white racism, or you look at the anti-white resentment of Barack Hussein Obama, look at the things that he wrote in his book where he made anti-white racist comments. What you see basically underlying the attitude, the mentality there, is jealousy. They're jealous because look at the leading forces for change and for great civilization and technology in the world today. Most of that comes from whites in the world today. That doesn't mean that was always true. It wasn't always true. There were times when darker people were more advanced than the people of Europe. I mean, there were times in history, which is why I'm not a racist, and I do not believe in racism. But I do believe that today there's no question that modern Western countries, they are the forces for positive change in the world today, and there's tremendous jealousy, tremendous envy over the accomplishments of modern Western societies. And some of that is similar to the type of envy we see that causes anti-Semitism, envy of Jews and of Jewish success and of Jewish brains that causes anti-Semitism. So there is some similarity. Anyway, thank you, Super Zionist. And now we go to the fantastic Gematria, who writes, and I quote, what do you think of Jews who visit Germany and Poland for events such as March of the Living? Is this positive for young Jews? Unquote. No, I don't think so. I don't think Jews should go to countries that murdered 6 million Jews during the Holocaust. These are nations with the blood of millions of Jews on their hands, and they haven't really changed. And I think that, I mean, today their policies are still anti-Israel. They want Israel to be destroyed just as they, with their own bare hands, destroyed millions of Jews. And so it is absolutely shameful that Jews go and give huge amounts of tourist dollars to these countries. Jews should have no connection to these countries, should not buy products from these countries, and should not go visit these countries. If Jews want to understand and want to understand the meaning of the Holocaust and want to learn the lesson of the Holocaust, they should go to Israel. That's where they should go. And they shouldn't go to visit. They should go to live in Israel. First they should go to visit, and then they should go to live there, especially in Judea and Samaria. A strong Israel and a strong Jewish people throughout the land of Israel, that is the real answer to the Holocaust. Not having museums and exhibits and discussions and seminars. We don't need we've had museums and discussions and exhibits and seminars and begging people to understand. We had that for 2,000 years. We need a strong Jewish state in the land of Israel, fulfilling biblical prophecy and doing what the Jews were destined to do by God. That's the lesson of the Holocaust. Anyway, thank you, Gematria. And now this question was from Confederate Kahanist a week ago, and he didn't get the question in. I'll tell you why. When I do the program, let me just see if there's any further questions here now. Yeah, when I do the program, sometimes between the time that after I finish recording the program, between the time that I finish recording and that I'm, you know, doing the processing of the program, between that time and when the program is actually put out on the forum, some people get in extra questions. Sometimes their extra questions get in, and those questions I miss. Those questions fall through the cracks. But because I saw that Confederate Kahanis didn't get his question, and I'm putting it in for him this week. This is his question from last week. Dear Chaim, what is your opinion of UFW founder Cesar Chavez since it's his birthday? Thanks and God bless, unquote. Okay, great question. Well, Cesar Chavez was a leftist, so obviously I don't like his left-wing politics, but I will say one thing. Cesar Chavez was consistently opposed to illegal immigration and illegal aliens. He felt that was bad for the union movement, and he was against illegal aliens, and he lobbied against it. When he was alive, he was a consistent lobbyist. He was a lobbyist against any illegal aliens coming into the country, and he actually put people on the border to try to prevent illegal aliens from crossing the border. So, I don't know. I mean, I don't know how they'd react to him today, because today nobody does that. But that was something that, you know, we could use some of that today. And people should mention that. People should always say, you know, Cesar Chavez was against having the illegal aliens in this country. The union movement, even these leftist unions were against it, because it does hurt American workers. It does hurt the American economy. It is damaging to have illegal aliens come into this country. It is damaging in every way. So it's just a point that sometimes people forget when they think of Cesar Chavez and the history of the United Farm Workers, the UFW, which he founded. Thank you, Confederate Kahanist. And now we go to our friend Maimonides, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, do you believe that Hashem has hardened the heart of Kim Jong-un so that Obama will be distracted from pressuring Israel, unquote? I don't know. I hope that he's hardened his heart and that he does, that this North Korean dictator does such dumb things that it leads to him being overthrown. Because he's very, very dangerous. He is giving nuclear material and nuclear know-how to Iran. He helped Pakistan develop nuclear bombs. He is very, very dangerous. And by the way, again, as I said before, China and Russia have played a very, very dirty game here. They have been supporting this North Korean dictator. China also helped build Pakistan's nuclear bomb program. So there's a reason why China backs up the North Koreans, because they're not really that different from them. So let's understand here that we're dealing with a hostile communist regime in North Korea and a very large and powerful hostile communist regime in China that very much threatens the security of the United States and the world. It's an important lesson for us to learn. Anyway, thank you, Maimonides, and I want to thank everybody for another program that I very much enjoy doing. Until next week, Shalom.